Our scripture reading this morning comes from the book of Revelation in the 21st chapter, beginning with verse 1. Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and the sea was no more. And I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, "See, the home of God is among mortals. He will dwell with them as their God. They will be his peoples, and God himself will be with them. He will wipe away every tear from their eyes. Death will be no more. Mourning and crying and pain will be no more, for the first things have passed away." And the one who was seated on the throne said, "See, I am making all things new." Also he said, "Write this, for these words are trustworthy and true." Then he said to me, "It is done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. To the thirsty I will give water as a gift from the spring of the water of life." I apologize for my voice, which obviously sounds like I'm in the basement, but as George had mentioned, with allergies, between allergies and the cold, I've gotten a double whammy, so I'll do the best I can. After World War II in Japan, there was a significant movement to reclaim their culture, and for them as a nation to figure out who they were. And there was a revival of many folk arts in Japan, a movement which actually still continues today and is very vibrant. And one of the things that occurred in Japan was a revival in the interest of the art of bonsai. Now, I know a bit about this because, of course, Anita and I have been doing bonsai for many years, about 50 years between the two of us. And what bonsai artists discovered was that this particular art of working with living things, with living trees and plants, was a very healthy thing to do mentally, and it is. And they saw it as a way to help reinvigorate their culture. And the center of this was a village named Omaya, which is about a half an hour or so north of Tokyo. It's one section of a city. And it's known as the Omaya Bonsai Village. And it sort of coalesced in the 1920s after a very bad earthquake in Tokyo. And I have never been there. I'd love to see it someday. But I am told that when you go there, there are at least half a dozen nurseries. Every house has world-class bonsais in pots out in front of their house. And it is an immersion. And I've known many people who have gone there and say it's just an incredible experience where you are completely immersed in the peace and the tranquility that is brought about by the presence of all these trees that have been cultivated, some of them for centuries. The reason that bonsai was one of the things that helped to reinvigorate the Japanese culture was because the focus was on life. The focus is on life. And wherever there is life, there is always hope. And so we come to our text in Revelation today, which is very much about this. Now, in Revelation, we have a contrast between two cities. The two cities that are contrasted are Babylon, or Rome, which is Babylon is code language for Rome, and the New Jerusalem. Now, it's in the ancient world, it was a very common thing, and if this carries over in a sense to our own culture, where cities were often referred to as being female. And I know that people that were in the Navy, the ships are called she, and so forth. I realize that there are all kinds of gender issues with that, but we don't have time to get into that. So just imagine yourself as we're thinking about this image of the city of Jerusalem coming down. Think of yourself as a first century Christian. And just set aside for now the all those modern issues. The difference between Babylon and the New Jerusalem, Babylon is for sale, for a price. Babylon represents the corruption of the world. It represents the power that arrays itself against God's people to persecute. That's Babylon. Babylon is business as usual. And then, in this text, we have the New Jerusalem. Not the Old Jerusalem. Not the Old Jerusalem that Jesus wept over, the city that kills the prophets and stones the messengers that God sends. It's the New Jerusalem. The city in which all tears are wiped away. All grief is gone. All pain is past. And healing is present everywhere. So the New Jerusalem is where God is, and the old Babylon is where God is not. And, as the message is in Revelation throughout the book, Babylon will fall. Babylon will fall. Now, last week I told you that that the book of Revelation is not about the future. And it isn't. It isn't a roadmap, a prediction of when the various things are going to happen and all that. There have been so many theories that everything from the European Common Market to Henry Kissinger and Ronald Reagan were the Antichrist. And you can spend an entire lifetime studying all those interesting theories. And I have to admit, I have an acquired taste for it. Even though I don't believe it myself, it's fascinating stuff. We don't have time for that here. The book of Revelation, though, is in a sense about the future. And the way that it is about the future is that it is about hope. And the image that we get in the last couple of chapters of Revelation, and I would urge you to read these chapters. Don't just read them in little snippets. Read chapters 21 and 22 straight through. It's wonderful. Because what we find is an image of life, the tree of life. And where in the scriptures do we find the tree of life? Where else? In the book of Genesis, the Garden of Eden, absolutely. It is not a coincidence that with the tree of life being at the beginning, where humanity fails, that we find reconciliation and redemption at the end, and the tree is still there. It's not the text we have today. That's in chapter 22. But it pervades this image. And there's water, as we've been hinting at and talking about, and with our Earth Day service a few weeks ago. Water is the most vital element of life. We know that. We can't live without water. We can't. We ourselves are mostly water. So that these pictures, these images of life, just absolutely suffuse this text. Water is life. Water is a blessing. And so we find that at the end of time, however that will happen, and it's not for us to figure out, because we can't figure out anyway, the world in the future will be marked by reconciliation and healing. And it doesn't mean that that's inevitable. Sometimes people will read that and think, oh, that means we can do whatever we want because God's going to clean it all up afterwards. Well, it's not quite like that. we should also be participating in the anticipation of that realm that is to come, in which all things are reconciled, all pain and all grief are gone, and healing is present everywhere. So the church should be looking forward. The church should always be looking forward, not looking back at our own mistakes. And as we know, the Christian church throughout the last 2,000 years, the Congregational Church in New England, has made a lot of mistakes. Too many to recount in a single day. But we've made a lot of mistakes. But we can't let that hold us back. Because the church, throughout its history, has always had this vision that in the end, all the mistakes that we have made will be wiped away, and the sea will be no more. The sea in the scriptures in Old and New Testament represents rebellion, because the sea is uncontrollable. It's like the weather. So all the things that would work against us will be gone. The church should always be looking forward with hope, looking forward with life, and knowing that wherever there is life, there is always hope. But we find many times that some are more comfortable with looking back. The problem with white supremacy is that it does look back. It looks back to an imagined time when white men had, and actually they did, or we did, had control over everything, were considered the standard by which all people in the world were judged, and had privilege. Well, the privilege is still around, but it's starting to disappear. And some white men find that a very uncomfortable thing. Personally, I do not. And they want to bring it back. So we're going to look back at the past. We're going to create an imagined fantasy past that really didn't exist quite the way it did, but it does in their minds. And of course, the justification is we're going to take out anybody who threatens that fantasy vision. It's sad, but there are people who think like that. That's looking back. And that isn't that's not the New Jerusalem. That's Babylon. That's Babylon. It's a power that oppresses. There's no life there. But then we come to the New Jerusalem. And John is writing about the future at a time when the Christian church was beginning to experience persecution. Right at the end of the first century, the Emperor Domitian launched an empire-wide persecution, and people were rounded up. They were the classic image of being thrown to the lions in the Colosseum and all of that. And they needed encouragement because Babylon was out to get them, and it was winning. It was winning. And they needed to hear a message of hope that said, you're going to get through this, and at the end of time, all the trials that you have experienced will lead you to this tree of life. But John, whichever John it was, and we don't really know, was writing right in the midst of that. In the midst of that trial, that persecution, when things were still rough, when he knew that they needed to hear that message. And we do too. We're right in the middle of it. On either end, we have the tree of life. We have that image of the creation and then of humanity's failure to live up to God's standards. And at the end, this image of reconciliation. But in between is where we are. We're in the middle. Along with John, along with the first century Christians, and along with the Christian church as a whole. So the thing to do is to not lose sight. Keep a vision of the New Jerusalem, not the Old Jerusalem, not looking back, the New Jerusalem right in front of us. To live in the middle, and yes, to experience the pain and the grief that the world experiences, and we know there is lots of it. In the modern age of the internet, we can't escape the pain and the suffering of the world. We can't. We see images now just minutes after events happen where another synagogue is shot up or a mosque is burned or a marketplace is bombed. We see that and we feel that pain. And it's tempting to want to just withdraw, pretend that it doesn't exist because it's comfortable right where we are. So the question I'd ask is this: are you comfortable with the way the world is right now? You don't have to answer it right now. You can answer it in your own head. Take time and think about it. Maybe come back next week and that'll be your homework. Are you comfortable with the way the world is right now? I can, for myself, can say no, I'm not. There's a lot to do. What the church is called to do is to keep this vision of the New Jerusalem in front of us at all times. A vision of healing, a vision of reconciliation, a vision that puts behind us the pain and the mistakes and the failures of the past and looks ahead to be a part of making the world better. And in our particular context right now, that's not the easiest thing to do. We can't lose sight of our faith. We're living in an increasingly secular world where more and more people do not trust organized religion anymore. We know that. The role of faith and the value of faith is downplayed, and we are conditioned by the world around us to think that those who feel that they are called by God to do one thing or another are in the same category as snake handlers, that they're crazy. And so we're conditioned by our society to not talk about our faith because somebody else might think that we're nuts. The church is called to bring a message of hope and reconciliation and renewal to a world that is hell-bent on chewing its own leg off. This is what the church is called to be. Not to perpetuate the power and the oppression of Babylon, but to bring the healing and the peace and the life of the New Jerusalem. And to do it not just for our own time, but for all time. I'll close with a quote that came across just a couple of days ago from Rabindranath Tagore. Some of you are familiar with him. He was a Bengali poet back in the 20th century and a wonderful philosopher. And he wrote, as kind of a paraphrase, "Those who plant trees knowing that they will never sit in their shade have at least begun to understand the meaning of life." And this is what the church is to be about. Amen.